You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
I'm Dave Raymond, and this is MLB.com Extras, American League West. Pleased to be joined today by Alden Gonzalez, covering the Angels for Angels.com. And look, last year, best record in baseball, 98 wins. A very disappointing exit at the hand of the Royals. Does that mean that there's a lot of work to be done at these winter meetings, or how do we gauge what's going to happen?
I think this is a very different winter meetings for the Angels compared to the last three under Jerry Dipoto, in the sense that I think he legitimately really likes the way the roster looks right now. And I think the way that he's approaching these winter meetings is we don't really have to do anything, and we're good with where we stand. The thing that Jerry Dipoto continues to bring up is that he wants to add accent pieces, a little more depth in AAA. He needs to shore up the bench, which he did a little bit today in day one, claiming left-handed hitter Mark Krause off waivers from the Astros. But one thing that he's continued to preach is that they have to stay within their model. That model means staying below the luxury tax threshold, trying to create some payroll flexibility down the road, and not getting into a situation where they're signing another free agent to a big contract and making them a little tight again. They like their roster right now, but they're going to be open to a bunch of other opportunities that may come up at the winter meetings, and you never know. This is the same team that signed Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton when nobody thought that it was coming. So I never rule out any big moves like that, but they continue to preach that they're going to show restraint this offseason and not do anything big.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, though, because I was thinking the whole time, I'm like, man, if there's one team right now throwing around luxury tax implications, it's the Angels. But at the same time, I mean, it's a team, you know, a couple years ago, Pujols, C.J. Wilson. Yeah. Then it was Sean Burnett and Blanton. And then they make the move, to put in place Hamilton shortly after that. Then last year, they trade Trumbull. I mean, they've been active and in a very grand way in recent years. Yeah. So you are still prepared. You got the pen and
paper out.
Absolutely.
I never rule anything out as competitive as Artie Moreno is. And they do have money over there. I never rule anything out. And one thing that could be very interesting, I don't think it's likely, but I still keep it in the back burner, trading away a position player that makes a certain amount of money or even a starting pitcher, and then using that added payroll flexibility to go out and get maybe a top-tier starting pitcher. C.J. Wilson's name has come up in recent conversations. He's making $18 million next year. If they could free up $18 million, who knows? Maybe they go after a Max Scherzer, a James Shields, somebody like that. I think it's unlikely. I think it's a big risk when you trade somebody like that, and then maybe you don't get that free agent. But it's out there. Howie Kendrick's name is out there, too. Howie Kendrick's going to make $10 million next year. That would free up a lot of payroll space, too. But I feel like they don't want to get forced into a trade because they don't feel like they need to make a trade to make their roster better. Trading somebody like Howie Kendrick, trading somebody like David Freese, that's only going to weaken their lineup.
Okay, but they do have a lot of pieces in really every area of the game that you would care about. And so they do have some flexibility. And then there is some youth coming, like Grant Green is an example. What should fans expect of Grant Green, or maybe the better point is when should they expect?
I think, well, last year he got his opportunity to play a little bit, and next year he's going to get an opportunity too. The key with Grant Green, they feel like he can hit at the big league level. He's got to shore up his defense a little bit. They still haven't found a position for him, and that was something that they kind of expected when they traded for Grant Green 2 Julys ago for Alberto Callaspo when they acquired him from the A's. He could play second base at the big league level, but can he play third base? That's a big question. Can he play shortstop? Also a big question. They tried him out in left field. He did better than expected in left field, but the best path for Grant Green to get to the big leagues is to become as versatile as possible. So he's got to improve defensively at all those different kinds of positions. Third base is the one that they'd really like for him to get a little bit more comfortable with. David Freese is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. They don't really have somebody else. Caleb Coward, who used to be their number one prospect, has had two really bad seasons in AA. If Grant Green could shore up third base, that would be really big for the Angels.
Okay, let's talk about pitching for a moment, because they did make a move, right? Nick Tropiano from the Astros. But, boy, they're kind of going after the Astros a little bit here lately.
They are.
But, you know, there's a question mark with Garrett Richards in his knee. Where is he right now?
Well, Garrett Richards was cleared to throw on Thursday when he saw doctors. He's actually going to start throwing this week. And, you know, the funny thing about that is this is right around the time when Garrett Richards would have started his throwing program anyway. The expectation all along was that Garrett Richards was going to be ready for spring training. They said 6 to 9 months was his recovery from knee surgery, but it was always supposed to be 6 months. They threw in 6 to 9 months kind of as a cushion. he's on track to be ready for spring training, but they're going to really ease him into it. There's not many pitchers who undergo knee surgery on their landing leg like Garrett Richards mm-hmm. did, so it's kind of a tricky thing for them. And, you know, you mentioned Tropiano. Tropiano's a guy that a lot of people don't know. It was a move that really went under the radar, wasn't really talked about that much. But that move, when they traded Hank Conger to the Astros for Tropiano and Carlos Perez, a minor league catcher, that filled two of their needs right there, and it put them in a situation where they didn't have to trade Howie Kendrick. They didn't have to trade David Freese to acquire that cost-controlled starting pitching. Nick Tropiano can now, if he doesn't want to spawn the rotation in spring training, he could very easily just, you know, lead the rotation in AAA, and he could become their emergency fallback guy in case something happens. Or if Garrett Richards is not ready to start the season, he starts the season in their rotation. They feel that good about him. That move kind of allowed that flexibility now that they did not have before.
So it sounds like really the better part of their moves might be behind them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So you think they're in fairly decent shape at this point?
I think that's how they feel right now. And look, they're going to be open to opportunity. You never know when a team can come by with an offer that, you know, is really appealing to them. The Nationals would love a guy like Howie Kendrick, and they have veteran starting pitchers, you know, like a Doug Fister, like a Jordan Zimmerman, yeah, that yeah. would make so much sense in the Angels' rotation, because now Hector Santiago could slide into that, you know, swing man, long relief role, and you have even more starting pitching depth. Are those opportunities going to come? Maybe not. And I think one thing they're going to focus on now is they need a utility infielder. They non-tendered Gordon Beckham, who was going to make about $5 million. So they'd like to re-sign him. Maybe they go into the free agent market to try to get a utility infielder. Maybe they claim somebody off waivers. The big thing that I look for them from them is to try to shore up their bench now, acquire some more backup catchers, acquire some depth at middle infielder, maybe a couple more outfielders, and they need some left-handed relief too.
Okay. All right. So there are some needs. What about from the system then? Who is going to be able to matriculate from the minor leagues and maybe fill a couple of these, you know, ancillary positions for them?
Well, they have plenty of right-handed relief depth. That's one thing that they've built a lot in the last 14 months. There was a huge emphasis of Jerry Dipoto, acquire a lot of bullpen depth, and they've done it. They have a lot of guys in the minor leagues that could maybe matriculate a little bit more. Ken Bedrosian, we saw some signs of him last year. He struggled in the major leagues, but he's got great stuff. Another guy, Jairo Diaz, who throws really hard. Somebody else like Dan Reynolds, who they protected from the Rule 5 draft. Somebody who was a failed starter who's really worked out as a relief pitcher, somebody they feel good about. But the depth that they do not have in the minor leagues now is with their infield, and that's why they agreed to terms with Roberto Baldoquin, a Cuban middle infielder. They gave him an $8 million signing bonus because they don't really have that player in the minor leagues right now. With Howie Kendrick, a free agent at the end of the year, and Eric Ibar, a free agent in two more years, they needed that next middle infielder that could come up and is ready to step in. They feel that way about Baldoquin. Maybe they get a couple of more guys, but that's kind of the area that really suffered was their infield, especially when they traded Gene Segura a couple of mm-hmm. years ago to get Zach Greinke.
Mm-hmm. Maybe kind of the last thing for you here, and I feel bad even asking this question because I think it's a little bit unfair to the Angels, but with what the Dodgers are doing down the road, spending as much money as they are and trying to make the big splashy moves that they continue to do, here you guys are coming off the best season – regular season in big league baseball. Is there pressure, though, in Anaheim to keep up with the Joneses? Maybe just by spending money and that kind of thing?
I think so, and I think that's what and again, I mean, you know, the Angels have done great. They won 98 games. They led, mm-hmm. they led all of baseball in wins, but I guess that's what maybe frustrates the fan base because they see this team as a team that's going for it right now with a championship window that seems to be closing because you got so much money tied up to aging players. Jared Weaver, yeah. Albert Pujols, Josh Hamilton. But what the front office will continually tell you is that they're actually a really young team because they get production from the other side of the roster. They get production from Mike Trout, Cole Calhoun, Garrett Richards, guys who are in their 0-3 service time years and who have a lot of and who are still coming into their prime. And I think the reality with the Angels is they don't want to go over the luxury tax. They have a budget. Their budget requires them to stay below the tax. They're only, I mean, Dodgers, Red Sox, Yankees, you could count on one hand the teams that are willing to mm-hmm. exceed that tax. They have to operate below it. And right now, they have about $9 million of wiggle room, and that's just not enough money to add a top-tier starting pitcher. And the way that they feel about their rotation is their rotation is in a situation right now where it wouldn't benefit them to get a middle-of-the-road free agent, because all that would do was take away a number five spot from a young guy who deserves to get those innings right now. They don't want that guy. The only way they could improve their rotation is by going after the top of the market, and it's not within their budget, at least as of right now, to go after the John Lesters or the Max Scherzers.
Okay, I think my favorite part here is that we went all the way into the last minute before saying Mike Trout. Pretty amazing. Alan Gonzalez, great job. Thank you so much,
no problem.
Good luck this week.
Thank you.
With Jane Lee of OaklandA's.com, and let's talk about the winter meetings. You have the most difficult job in baseball among reporters because you cover the most mercurial general manager there is in Billy Beane. And I think for many people, I'll ask the question, what is he doing?
I think I'm still trying to figure out what he's doing. I don't know that anyone knows what he's doing, but we're probably going to be finding out, you know, here while we're here in San Diego and in the weeks to come. I mean, it's a little confusing, you know, when he goes out, signs Billy Butler to a 3-year, $30 million deal, you're thinking, okay, you know, they're collecting guys and they're going to contend next year. And then a few weeks later, they subtract Josh Donaldson, and now they've subtracted Brandon Moss. And you're like, but wait a minute, you know, what we thought was going on isn't. Now what is going on? And I think because those moves just kind of contradict each other, it's a little confusing. Clearly, the A's are in kind of a retooling mode. Billy Beane's never been a fan of the word rebuilding, and I think it's also kind of maybe a slap in the face to his current players, because clearly they do have a lot of talent still on that roster. They have great pitching. I mean, from the rotation to the bullpen, they still have fantastic pitching. But you're kind of wondering what's going on with the lineup. And I feel like there's so much more to be done and so many things we don't know, you know, that's yet to come, that we really can't draw any conclusions based on what has happened. I think we have to wait this out and see what's next, because hopefully, I mean, I'm assuming they do have a plan at the end of all this.
Well, he always does, and he is always making moves that keeps people guessing. And yet there's the one big issue that's lurking, and that's Jeff Samardzija. We're all waiting for John Lester to make some sort of decision, and then we can, I guess, figure everything out off of that. But Samardzija, in your estimation, good as gone, and how do you see this playing out?
I would think so. I mean, there's been, you know, some thought that the A's could hang on to him, you know, see how the first half plays out, and then maybe get a greater return for him at the trade deadline next year. But, I mean, his value is so high right now, and you know there's going to be those teams who miss out on, you know, the Lesters and the Scherzers, or who know they can't even get those guys to begin with, who see potential in trading for Samardzija. The only thing is, you only have him for 1 year. So how much are you willing to give up for 1 year of Samardzija? I think that's what a lot of teams are talking about right now. The A's probably won't grant, you know, a window for other teams to kind of negotiate maybe a longer deal. And I think Samardzija isn't interested in a longer deal right now. He wants to get to free agency. He wants the opportunity, you know, at the end of next season to be able to do what John Lester and Max Scherzer are doing right now. And you see the money they're getting, and, you know, there's Samardzija thinking, well, let me, you know, see what I can do. And he's said that all along. He wants to get to free agency. So he's been linked to the White Sox, and the White Sox, I think, would love to lock him up. I don't think it happens. I think they're still interested, though, even if they do get him for 1 year. But them and I'm sure the Red Sox, who have also been linked to him, you know, they're wondering, well, how much should we give up if we only have him for 1 year? So it will be interesting, but I do think, you know, when all is said and done, he will be somewhere other than Oakland, just because, you know, the market for pitching, you just can't see a guy like that who is clearly available not going anywhere.
It is a mysterious thing with Billy Beane. This morning, Brandon Moss traded to Cleveland for Joe Wendell. What's the reaction? I mean, it's very early, but what's the early reaction to this move?
Yeah, Joe Wendell's a name I had heard for a while, and I kept thinking, well, that can't be all they're getting. You know, this is, Brandon Moss is, he's a guy that's hit 25-plus home runs the past three seasons. So you're wondering, you know, why are they just getting a minor league infielder? And, you know, they listen to their scouts a lot, and so I'm sure they think very highly of Wendell. I know the Indians did too. He was a little bit blocked in the system, and the A's, are collecting as many middle infielders as possible. So it fits the need, but for someone who is about to make, you know, $7 million in arbitration like Moss is, and the production he's given the club, it almost felt like they were just kind of giving him away for not much at all. So I think the return is a little bit questionable in this case. You know, you look back to the Donaldson deal and you say, okay, you know, that's probably a good deal so long as this works out, this guy works out, this guy works out. But there's multiple pieces in there. And so I think my initial reaction was just surprise in that Wendell was all they got, and who knows, he could be end up being a very valuable piece for them. But for a guy like Moss, who has given them so many home runs, you know, driven in so many runs over the last few years, that part was a little bit confusing.
Yeah, it's an interesting point though, because when I think of Billy Bean, I think of him really as kind of a volume trader, right? And the Donaldson deal would follow suit. You get Brett Laurie, and you get three prospects. They don't all have to work out, but he likes to play the odds. And then you see this one with Moss, Joe Wendell. And it's as if he knows something perhaps nobody else knows. And
yeah,
sometimes he does.
And I mean, people are talking about salary dump, but, I mean, Moss is going to make $7 million. And while that's you know, a bit steep for the A's, it's still only $7 million for a 30-home-run guy. So... you know, they are clearly trying to get younger and, you know, in doing so, maybe shedding payroll a little bit. But this couldn't be about the money with Moss, because, you know, he's still making less than $10 million. And I mean, he's making less than Billy Butler will make. And he's arguably, you know, a better first base option and can provide just as much pop, if not more. So I don't really buy into that it was about shedding payroll, because $7 million, it's kind of a steal for a guy like that. But he is coming off hip surgery. I think that's what we do have to remember. Hips can get complicated too in the rehab process. He's hoping to be ready by the start of the season, but you know, you don't know. So maybe there was something there that the A's were a little hesitant about.
Okay, so as you put in the long hours these next couple of days, what one or two things that you've got your eye on that you think you might see?
I think after today, now that we know Moss is officially gone, I think that's, you know, the first thing we expected. You know, we kind of wait and see where John Lester goes and then which teams go after Jeff Samardzija, because you have to think that even if it doesn't happen this week, in the coming weeks, I mean, I do think that Samardzija will be traded.
But would you guess that Billy would try and turn that around as quickly as possible?
I would think so, yeah. And I mean, I've heard he's already been in serious discussions with teams involving Samardzija. Right. And you have to think that these teams, that maybe some of them aren't in on a Lester, they know that once Lester signs, other teams are going to be in the mix. So they've got to get something done, or as close to being done as they can from their end. So it wouldn't surprise me if something happened sooner than later.
How does last year's collapse, if you will, I think that's probably a little too strongly worded, but that shift in the way the season went so dramatically after the great start, the sad finish, how much does that affect the way Billy goes about business? We always think of him as such a black and white numbers kind of guy, and I know those characterizations are probably overdone as well, but how much does the emotional turn of last year affect what he does now?
I don't know that he's going to, you know, let emotions get the best of him. I think he's been doing this too long for that to happen. And, you know, he understands the game. And, I mean, this isn't the first time the A's have been, you know, disappointed in the playoffs. They're getting very familiar with early postseason departures. So for Billy, I think it's just, you know, just another offseason, like, as normal. I don't think anything that happened in the second half really impacts it. I think he's going about business as usual. We might not understand that right now, but, you know, like we said before, he always has a plan. You know, you go back, you know, to a lot of things he's done that maybe at the time didn't make sense. The offseason that he traded Trevor Cahill, Gio Gonzalez, and Andrew Bailey, and fans everywhere thinking, what is he doing? And then they win the division the next year. So, you know, I think he's just kind of, you know, doing what he always does. And whether or not we understand it, he doesn't care. You know, he's been doing this a while, and clearly, you know, he has something up his sleeve.
We have to wrap it up, but I want to ask you, too, one last thing. Is there a young player coming up, some prospect that maybe affects the way he thinks about some of these moves, too, that people maybe aren't all that aware of?
You know, they're kind of lacking in the upper levels of the minors, and I think that's why he's making some of these moves to add depth. But Daniel Robertson is a guy, you know, they foresee him at shortstop, not next year, but in 2016. So really, you know, the big talk is their pursuit of a shortstop, but they kind of just need a temporary replacement for Jed Lowrie until Robertson is ready. And, you know, how he develops this year, it will certainly be important. So I think, you know, because they know he's there, have him in, you know, the back of their minds, that is kind of impacting how they're going about finding a shortstop. And it's why, you know, they probably won't dip into the free agent market, because those guys are looking for multi-year deals and the A's aren't interested in those. So I think that is one guy to watch for, and also, you know, a reason why, you know, maybe they're not going out for the shortstop that a lot of people think they should get.
Okay. Great stuff as always, Jane. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
With Greg Johns and winter meetings. Best time of year. You know, for a lot of teams on the West Coast, I think of this as being a short trip, but there's no such thing from Seattle, is there?
There's no short trips in Seattle, but we like it a lot better than going to Nashville or Orlando. This seems as traditional, at least the last 4 or 5 years we've been traveling. It's kind of nice to stay on the West Coast and get up at the same time. So, yeah, we're glad to be here in San Diego. What better place?
You know, and in recent years, the Mariners have been a player around this time of year, which has got to be exciting because there were so many years where I think people were hungry for a big move, hungry for that next piece to make a move in the division. Last year, the Robinson Cano deal seemed to change everything for this team. And then, of course, getting so close at the end of the year. So what's the tenor like in Seattle right now?
Well, there's an excitement level based on coming so close. And Bill, it's been a while, 2001, since the Mariners were in the playoffs. So a game short last year, and they feel like they're right there this year. I mean, I think that's the difference. There's fewer openings. It's more of a set feeling, and we just need to add that last piece from the, I think that's the front office feel, and I think the fans feel that way as well. There's an excitement of what it's going to take to get over that bump. One game out of a wild card spot last year. Cano made a huge difference last year. The meetings last year, that was obviously the huge story. They're not going to go that big this year, and they made a move already for Nelson Cruz that's answered a lot of questions that they needed to answer. So it's more specific needs here at this meetings than maybe in the past.
All right, so for you, Greg, I mean, it's Thanksgiving. You're enjoying a little family time, a little turkey, and then, boom, the next day.
What are you saying there?
yeah, next day, hey, here you are. You know, Nelson Cruz, a $58 million deal. Jay Happ comes down the pike. That's a busy and rapid turnaround from the relaxing holidays to the news cycle again. How big a shock was that to you?
The Cruz deal wasn't a shock, just because they had to get that big bat in the middle of the lineup. That's been a focus. Jackson Rancic said from the start, day after the season ended, hey, we've got to go get a big bat, put him behind Robinson Cano, Kyle Seager, get a right-hander between those two lefties and really make some hay. That was a big problem last year. They were very lefty-heavy. And as players went off the market, there was diminishing number of right-handed bats, and Cruz was sitting there, and it made a lot of sense. That was a move they had to make. If not, they were going to have to be pretty active in some trades. Adding Cruz without giving up anything is big. I mean, they give up some money, of course, but without giving up any of their young pitching, that was big for them. So it didn't stun me. And then they traded Michael Saunders right after that for J.A. Happ. Again, Zarentic had said from the start, we need to add a veteran starting pitcher to our rotation to really solidify between the top of the rotation with a couple of veterans in Felix and Iwakuma. They wanted to get a veteran to kind of bridge the gap between their young guys, and they get that with J.A. Happ. So moves that, they needed to make.
You mentioned Iwakuma, and there were rumors back and forth a little bit about his status, but Jack Zarentic seems to have answered that question.
Jack came out about as strong as he would ever come out. Jack says, as a GM, you never say never, but this is about as close to never as I can say. The rumors came out that Iwakuma might be on the block, and he, in fact, immediately called the Iwakuma's translator and said, please get a hold of Iwakuma's in Japan. Let him know that there's nothing to that. They want him at the top of that rotation along with Felix.
So then, what is Jack trying to get done this week down here in San Diego? I mean, what needs are there aside from maybe, well, aside nothing, who might be the targets for that right field spot?
Well, clearly Melky Cabrera at the top of that list. He's the best free agent out there left. And a nice fit. The Robinson Cano factor is interesting to note there. Cano, good friends with Nelson Cruz. And Nelson, when he signed, certainly said, hey, you know, having Robinson here, that was an eye-opener. Certainly the friendship he has, and he trusted Robinson when he talked to him about the situation in Seattle. Robinson Cano, good friends with Melky Cabrera. They came up together in the Yankees organization, so there's a good connection there. Melky fits a lot of ways, looking for a good number two hitter, switch hitter, would really help balance their lineup again. So he's a logical fit. If not there, Alex Rios is another name, a guy coming off a down year, at least power-wise, but a good solid right fielder, that the kind of guy they're looking for. So they're going to come out with a right fielder. They almost have to after trading Michael Saunders. They have a pretty open need there. They're going to find a right fielder, if not through the trade route or the free agency, one of the two.
What about the organizational depth? I mean, that's been, in recent years, one of the things we hear so much about with Seattle was that they had so many really talented, great young kids coming through the system. And we'll get to some of those names here in a moment. But as they begin, as they did last year, to make bolder moves and play for the right now with guys like Cano and Nelly Cruz and company, what is it doing for the depth? And then, you know, how much of that might end up being collateral for them this time of year?
It's interesting. A lot of their depth has come up already. I mean, yeah. That's the nucleus of what they have. And some has worked out, some hasn't. Kyle Seager is a guy that you look at as the kingpin of that. I mean, and with $100 million stacked up now over 7 years, he is the epitome of what they've been trying to bring up. And they got other young guys, you know, Dustin Ackley. Their pitching is really the core of that, is the young group, the Taiwan Walker, James Paxton, Roenis Elias, a Cuban that won 10 games for him last year. I mean, these are guys that are coming up through the system that are, you know, really the lifeblood of what. And Zrenzik, he's a player personnel guy. He's a draft guy. That's his background, and he wants to build through the draft. So, you know, a lot of the top names are there. Mike Zunino, these are guys that it's where they're going. They're not going to give those guys up easily to for short-term fixes. So, you know, I don't see them making a deal, say, for a one-year guy, an Upton or a Cespedes. That's a tough deal to give up a Taiwan Walker for that level. So, you know, that's kind of where they're balancing right now.
But does it put pressure on them now, because so many of those guys have matriculated up to the big leagues, or the handful that are right on the cusp there, it's, you know, kind of a make a decision time on some of these guys. We either got to move them and get something for them or find a way to use them. And the reason I ask about pressure is because, you know, if they're there and there's, and that's the organizational depth question, right? What are they deep down at single A? Do they feel like they still have some of these really high ceiling guys coming behind this wave, or where are they with that?
I think they feel they're solid there, and I mean, any organization is going to look long term as well as short term, and you know, they're not any different than anybody else. They like their young guy DJ Peterson, first round pick that's close. Patrick Kivlahan's a kid coming up that looked real good. You know, I mean, they've got names. James Jones, a rookie that made a pretty good stole 27 bags last year, and he could be in that right field mix as well. I mean, they've got talent, of course. Nobody wants to give that up. Cost controlled guys for 6 years. You know, those are the chips you have. But do they go for it? Is this year they make the big move to go for it? Sure, they could, but I think Jack's always a guy that's going to look long term as well.
Yeah, it seems like the timing is always one of the big issues, right? And Oakland may be passing for a year. I don't know. You never know with them. Houston's still on the come. Rangers are depleted and hurt. We all know what the Angels did last year, but it seems as if there is a moment. It may be upon us for the Seattle Mariners.
And you see that in two ways, too. I mean, Felix is in his prime. I mean, he's not going to be around for 10 more years. You know, Cano's in his prime. He will be around for 10 more years. He's going to get paid for it. But these are his peak years. And you know, I think that's why they thought it was important, though, to tie up Kyle Seager, you know, a guy for the now and into the long term. And they're going to look – you know, beyond this year, but this is a good, this is a chance. And there's a reason they weren't going out to sign Nelson Cruz, and there's a reason they're in the conversation with Melky Cabrera. I mean, their payroll is going up. They see a window here, and they're definitely poised to go for it.
All right, Taiwan Walker is lighting it up in the Arizona Fall League. The gun's hitting 100 all the time, right? And people love the potential. There's sure. a lot of excitement. Is he going to get traded? Are they going to use him to get that big piece in right field, or do you think we'll see him at Safeco in the near future?
Personally, I would be surprised if they traded Taiwan. I definitely don't think they'll trade him for a 1 year guy like mm-hmm. like an Upton. You know, especially after they signed Nelson Cruz. I mean, I think that took some of the pressure off of having to give up one of their top young pitchers. Could he be dealt in a Matt Kemp? I mean, it might make more sense, a 5 year type situation, but I think Taiwan Walker is a big part of their future. They do too. This is a kid who's 22 years old, all the talent in the world, on the verge. You know, he's got a little bit of major league experience now. Knows what it's going to take. Motivated. You know, I see him having some big years coming up, and it's tough to give away a guy that's cost controlled for 5 or 6 years. That could be one of the top pitchers in the game.
Okay, then I think we really need to discuss the shortstop position too. Brad Miller, Chris Taylor, where are they heading? Who do you see winning that battle, and what's the future of that position for the Mariners?
They get two guys that split time last year. You know, Brad came up, started the season starting shortstop, struggled a little offensively, which is really his strong point. So that, and they brought Taylor up, who's a little better defensive player, they feel. And down the stretch, both played very well. I think Taylor has a little edge defensively, is what they're seeing, and Miller has a little more versatility. So it wouldn't surprise me, especially with Willie Blomquist coming back from microfracture knee surgery, that Miller could be more in a utility type role next year. They worked him a little bit in the outfield last year, and they really liked what they saw. He's a good athlete. He's got a nice bat, and I could see him being that guy that they can put in a couple different spots. Is he a trade chip? The Blomquist situation kind of makes that an interesting question, because he may not be ready at the start of the year. He's starting to run in a pool right now, working back from pretty major surgery. So he's planning to be ready by the start of the year, but you know, you never know with that kind of thing. So Miller may be more of an insurance factor there than people are thinking right now.
Okay, I just saw Lloyd McClendon walking by with the phone to his ear and a bunch of people following him. Feel like you need to go chase him?
Lloyd always has something going on.
Hey, listen, winter meetings 2014. Could be a lot more big stuff in store for the Seattle Mariners. Greg Johns, thanks for the insight, and good luck this week.
You bet. Good talking to you.
Pleased to be joined by Brian McTaggart, Astros beat writer, astros.com. And all right, Brian, it's the winter meetings. Jeff Luno's had a couple of years now under his belt. He's shaping this roster and really an organizational philosophy. How far along the process is he on that, and what do you expect that they'll be doing at these winter meetings?
Yeah, he's been on the job 3 years now, and I think we've seen some of the strides they've made. I mean, a lot has been written about their minor league system getting so much better, but finally we saw some improvement at the major league level last season, winning 19 more games. Now, there was nowhere to go but up after you win 51 games, but the fact that they did win 19 more games, I mean, that's a step in the right direction, and this is going to be an interesting winter because they have some money to spend. The TV revenue they have that they didn't have for a couple of years. So they're going to be pretty active in the market, I think, to fill some of their big needs. Relief pitching is obviously at the top of their list because their bullpen was kind of a mess. So I think the Astros will be pretty active.
Boy, you make a really good point, because that TV situation that they were in for the last couple of years was a real anchor. And now that they have that straightened out, they've got the income coming in now. They made a play at Andrew Miller. Now, it didn't work out, but who else might be on the radar then for them in the bullpen?
Well, David Robertson's the name you hear a lot. They're certainly interested in him. Yeah, Andrew Miller, they offered 4 years, $40 million, which was more than the Yankees offered. But at the end of the day, Miller went to the Yankees. And that's one of the things the Astros have to fight, I think, is the free agents don't view it, I think, as the top guys is a place to come, Houston a destination. I think that'll change once they start winning. And I think once they sign that first free agent, I think maybe some other people will be like, okay, you know, maybe it's not so bad. But, I think David Robertson would be one. They would lose a draft pick, but they have multiple draft picks early. Their top two picks are protected, so that's not an issue. Luke Gregerson's another name that they've had interest in. He doesn't have experience closing, but, they could put him in the mix. And I think he's a guy that wants to close. He was behind Heath Bell in Houston Street, so it would be his first opportunity. But I think at the end of the day, if they had their choice, it would be David Robertson as their closer.
Anybody on the block potentially they feel like they have value in, might be able to move and pick up a good piece at these meetings?
Yeah, the name to watch, I think, in that would be Dexter Fowler. He's going into his final year before free agency. He's due to make probably $9 million in arbitration. And then they have options in center field. They have George Springer, who's probably a better center fielder than Dexter Fowler. Jake Marisnyk, who they acquired in a trade last year with the Marlins, he can play center field. So, I don't think they're actively looking to move Fowler right now, but I think if they got a trade proposal, I think they would. Another, if you look at their catching situation, they have four catchers on their major league roster. They acquired Conger, so I think Carlos Corporan could be moved. Jason Castro's name has come up, but if you trade Castro, you're going to have to go find a starting catcher. But I think Dexter Fowler is the one that we need to watch on as far as trades.
You mentioned Jason Castro, and I've heard the name, trickle out there every now and then.
Right.
How big an impact would that make on their backstop situation?
It'd make a big impact because you have Hank Conger and Carlos Corporan, they're backup catchers. I mean, that's what they are, and nothing wrong with that. But if they trade Castro, they're going to have to go get a front end catcher somewhere, and that's not going to be easy to do. So, Castro's a guy now who's in his I think second year of arbitration. Mm-hmm. Money's starting to get up there. Did not have a great year at the plate, but I don't think they'll trade him just because of what I said. I mean, they would have to go out and get another catcher unless they think Conger can be a starter. But, at 27 years old and he's been a backup all his career, I think that's his role.
I don't know if I want to mix two streams on this one or not, but shortstop, let's go with two themes here. One is, Carlos Correa, how close may he be? And then you're hearing the name Jed Lowry as a potential return for the Houston Astros, and he was pretty good for them when he was there.
Yeah.
Where do you think they come down on that position right now?
Well, whoever they get to play shortstop, which is a need, I think will be a stopgap until Correa gets here. I mean, Correa, I thought, would have been the opening day shortstop next year had he not been injured. He was probably going to go to Double-A Corpus Christi within days before he got injured, broke his leg in the middle of the season. So he's going to have to go to Double-A probably to start the year, Triple-A. So I don't think we can bank on seeing Correa in 2015. But if you look at the production they got from Jonathan Villar and Marwin Gonzalez, just not what you need as a shortstop, I think, to take that next step. So Larry's a name that could come in there and play. Third base is a need. Larry can play third base as well. But, Larry had I think he liked it in Houston. A.J. Hinch is their manager, is a Stanford guy. Those Stanford guys like to hang together. So, but I think it would be a good fit for a lot of reasons. Definitely, Larry did not have a great year last year with A's. When he was in Houston, I think he played pretty well.
All right. Well, we'll segue with you there. You mentioned A.J. Hinch's name. So tell us a little bit about Hinch and, how that piece came together and how you see that relationship with Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. We all know that Bo Porter and Luhnow did not see eye to eye, and Bo went on to another job now with the Braves. But I think that Luhnow and Hinch are very much in lockstep on everything they do. In fact, the day before the winter meetings, Luhnow was at his house in San Diego. I mean, I think they've developed a very tight bond, and AJ's done everything there is to do in baseball pretty much. He was an interim GM, so he's going to be involved more than I think most managers are in stuff in the day-to-day roster decisions and at the winter meetings and things like that. So, and I think Jeff welcomes that. I think he likes having a manager who he can talk to on his level as far as knowing about the inner workings of agents and players. And AJ's done it all. So I think after he butted heads with Porter, I think his number one goal was to bring in a guy that he really knew he could trust and get along with, and it was very capable for the job.
That's pretty interesting because a lot of the general managers, the new wave of general managers, if you will, who rely so heavily on the metrics, it seems as if they're always working against that old institution, and that you want, a lot of times it's as if they're looking for somebody they can control. But you're saying in this case, you think it'll be a really open two-way street between the two?
Yeah, I think it's a very good partnership. Yeah. It's kind of unique. I don't know. We haven't seen anything like this in Houston before, but you know, who knows what will happen down the road, you know, when 2 or 3 years, if things aren't going as well, you know, who knows. But, you know, I definitely think they're in lockstep, and it's going to be interesting to see that relationship develop as we go forward.
Well, how much more room does Jeff Luhnow have? I mean, is there pressure in Houston for him to start producing? We see some fruits from this, you know, change in philosophy?
I think so. I mean, you can only talk about our minor league system has gotten better. Our minor league system is good for so long. The fans are like, well, we don't live in Oklahoma City or Corpus. We live in Houston. We want to see these guys here. And we saw that last year with Springer coming up, Fulton Evans coming up. So, you know, I think the ownership is still very much behind Luhnow. They did improve by 19 games. He has revamped the farm system. So he's on the right track, I think. But I think this will be a big year to continue that development. And guys like Jonathan Singleton, who came up, he's going to have to improve. And Fulton Evans, is he going to be a reliever? He's going to have to contribute. Now that these prospects are coming up, they need to start contributing like Springer did, because some of them came up and didn't do so well. So that's going to be the next step, as well as trying to find the veterans to put around them.
Singleton disappointing. Dominguez not real productive at third base for them. You know, they want the youth to come up and be a part of this. But Mark Appel, you know, the 1-1, and you, I don't want to say that you can't miss on a 1-1, but boy, there's a lot of pressure for that guy to eventually be a big time contributor. And I know there was plenty of news around him last year. What's it looking like for him so far in this offseason?
Crazy year for Mark Appel. Man. You know, he had the appendectomy, missed all of spring, went to extended spring training, couldn't pitch in Lancaster, all that stuff that everyone knows about. But at the end of the day, he went to the Arizona Fall League and pitched really, really well. And I think the Astros were very happy. His velocity was there. He was hitting 97, 98, still learning to pitch a little bit. You know, I think professional ball was kind of an eye-opening experience, getting the ball every fifth day as opposed to once a week when you're at Stanford. Took him a while to adjust to that. But I think what he did at Arizona in the Fall League and pitching so well, I think has gotten himself back on track a little bit. He's going to come to big league camp. I don't think he'll compete for a spot in the rotation out of spring training, but I do think that if he'll start in AAA, and I think if he goes to AAA and puts up, you know, a good month, 2 months, I think we'll see Mark Appel in Houston in 2015. I'd be surprised that he doesn't. I mean, let's be honest, that would be 2 years after being drafted. You want your 1-1 2015 on your major league roster and producing.
The Astros have, in recent years, gotten away with spending much less money than most franchises, in part because they're making this transition, and, you know, they felt like they had room, I believe, to make that kind of a move, much like the 76ers are doing in the NBA right now. But you know, that offer to Andrew Miller was robust. How much do you see them increasing the payroll this year?
I think it will increase by about $20 million. They finished last year around $50 million, so you're going to $70 million. That puts them more in the middle of the pack. You're still not the $100 million that we saw a few years ago, but I think to be in contention, they're going to have to spend $100 million at some point. But I don't think they're at that point yet. I mean, what good would it go out? Would it be for them to go out and have $100 million payroll when maybe you're 2 years from contention? But they're going to open up the purse strings a little bit. You know, $20 million more dollars. The offer they made to Andrew Miller would have been. He would have been making $10 million a year, so there would still be some room to add some other guys. So with the TV revenue now coming in, that's going to be like $60 million a year. And maybe if they end up making a trade, Dexter Fowler, we mentioned, is going to make $9 million. That could give them some more payroll flexibility. But all along, Jim Crane said, we're going to rebuild the farm system. We're not going to spend money until those guys have come up and they're contributing, and we've got to fill some holes. And we're starting to see that now.
All right, Brian, one bold prediction as we wrap it up. Anything you think you'll see that might surprise folks in these next couple of days here in San Diego?
Well, I think, you know, I think if we talked about Jed Lowrie earlier, if the Astros get Jed Lowrie, I think that would be surprising in that he'd been there before. He had some run-ins with the Astros last year on the field. I think that was more to do with Bo Porter than anything. But I think him coming back to Houston would be kind of surprising, but also a symbol that maybe people are starting to believe the Astros are on the right track. You can go there, and in a couple of years, they're going to probably be winning some games.
Okay. Great stuff as always, Brian. Well, stay busy.
Always. You too.
Yeah, always good to see you. With T.R. Sullivan. And, T.R., this is an interesting situation John Daniels and the Rangers find themselves in. Coming off last year, all the injuries, the aggravation, with some 60 players used. And I guess there's not great clarity going into this year as to who's going to be back and to what extent. So what does that mean for Daniels and company? What are they doing this week here?
Well, Dave, you're right. It makes it more complicated because simply put, you know, if you go out and get a big name pitcher, they want a starting pitcher. So if you go out and trade for a big name starting pitcher and give up a lot of minor league depth, and then find out that some of your guys that you were counting on to be healthy, like Prince Fielder, Shin Soo Chu, Yu Darvish, some of those guys, if they're not 100% healthy, then you've wasted a lot of minor leaguers for a big name player that can't help you because of all the injuries. So really right now the Rangers are a little leery of taking the big plunge into the big name, big free agent market until they get a better handle on what the health is of their players. So that's kind of slowed them down a little bit here at the winter meetings and during the off season, is they're still trying to get a feel for what they have coming back.
That said, do you suspect that Daniels will, you know, try to make some moves here, starting pitching elsewhere? I mean, there are, it is sort of, you know, all the hype right now is around the starting pitching, but I think he's said, right, he's not interested in Lester, Scherzer, Shields. They don't want to get into those big.
No, they can't afford the big name pitchers. So they've been talking about trading for a pitcher, and what they would like is a pitcher that has 2 or 3 years left before he can be a free agent. As we all know, there's a lot of pitchers available who will be free agents after next season. You know, David Price, guys like that, Jordan Zimmermann, Ian Kennedy, a couple guys on the Reds, Leake and Lattos, I believe. So, you know, you can get those guys, but they'll be free agents next year. So you don't want to give up a big pool of young prospects for guys who will be gone in a year. So what they're trying to do is get a younger, controllable 2 to 3 year type of pitcher that could fit into their rotation beyond 2015. That would be their top of their wish list. But obviously that's easier said than done unless you give up some of their top minor league prospects.
It sounds nice, though, right? I mean, a young, controllable starting pitcher. A couple names out there that you can?
Well, they've talked about, you know, the Padres are one team that they've talked about. And, you know, they got Andrew Cashner and Tyson Ross. So those are couple pitchers that they've at least talked to the Padres about. You know, the Mets have some pitching. You know, some other clubs. I know Haney's out there with the Marlins, have a couple of guys that might be of interest to them. So, you know, there are some guys out there. But, again, the asking price is very high. When you give up a controllable young pitcher, you want significant return on what you're giving up.
What about the pipeline of talent coming through the system? You know, we've seen in recent years, you know, either through acquisition or just through development, some great young players come up. And, you know, Profar, the right shoulder, where are we with that, number one? But what else is in the pipeline for them?
Well, they have one of the best power prospects in all of baseball, Joey Gallo, third baseman, looks like a linebacker, you know, Troy Glaus type of guy. You know, and they're going to keep him at third base for now. But they got a young catcher, Jorge Alfaro, who's outstanding. They got some good young pitching, Alex Gonzalez and Luke Jackson, and some other really good depth of starting pitching in the system. You know, they're loaded in the middle infield. They got some excellent outfielders. So they've got a great farm system coming to life again. You know, over the past 3 years, they've traded a lot of players to try and reinforce their pennant drives. But now that, you know, they're coming off the 95 loss season, you know, their farm system is really starting to get abundant at the upper levels.
So it almost seems as if they're in this weird spot, right, where it's almost a holding pattern for a year. And no one wants to resign themselves to that. But, you know, if you've got enough that you want to just develop to get to that level and be ready to go, and you could, you know, you can rely on that, hopefully, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to go out and spend a lot of money or resources to try and bolster what could be another injury-riddled year.
But on the other hand, if you get a guy like Prince Fielder back healthy, right. Darvish, Holland, Chu, you got Elvis Andrus, you got Beltre. I mean, you have a very good team if everybody's healthy. If this team could contend and win. So that's the quandary that they're in, is that do we try and reinforce this team and go for it this year, or do we wait a couple of years until our prospects are ready to really hit the major league level? So you're right, they're kind of going back and forth on that.
Yeah, that's a challenging one. Plus, this division seems to be in flux, although we're seeing, you know, the Angels and the Mariners making a push. We don't know, no one ever does, what the Oakland A's are doing. The Astros, eventually, are going to be a team on the come. They're probably not there yet. They're probably a couple years away from that. But so you don't want, I guess you don't want to miss those opportunities, you know, when they exist, if you're the Rangers.
Right. I mean, they know the Mariners are really loading up, and they know the Mariners are going to be strong. But, you know, if Darvish and Holland are healthy, that's two excellent top of the rotation pitchers. And if Fielder's healthy, if Chu's healthy, Beltre, that's a great middle of the order. Plus they got Leonis Martin in center field. You know, probably need another bat, probably need a backup catcher. But if everybody's healthy, this team is as good as there is in the division. But the question is everybody going to be healthy?
How serious were they about Torii Hunter? Did they think they really had a shot at getting Hunter? Was there a point where it might have happened?
He lives in Dallas or north of Dallas. And so they were hoping for a hometown discount. Mm-hmm. I mean, they like the player. They like his makeup. They like his clubhouse leadership. You know, they probably couldn't outbid even the Minnesota Twins because they don't want to spend a whole lot of money on a bat because of what they're trying to use their resources for starting pitching. But they're hoping he wanted to stay in Dallas, stay with his family, and maybe come to Texas for a little bit less.
What are you hearing about Profar, or for that matter, Matt Harrison's back? Any updates on these guys?
Well, Matt Harrison, they're taking it slow. I mean, he's had 2 years of back trouble, very serious back trouble. There's still some question whether he can come back from his latest surgery. It was a very serious condition. They're going to take it slow with him. He won't be competing for a job in spring training. He'll be on a throwing program by then, and he's got a long road ahead. Profar missed all of last season with a torn muscle in his right shoulder. He's going to start, he's going to start ramping it up in January. Won't be at full strength in spring training. They hope he'll be full strength when the season starts, but I'm almost certain that he'll be at AAA. I can't see a scenario where he makes the opening day roster. But you know, the Rangers are hopeful that he'll get back on track, maybe a full season at AAA or at least a half season at AAA. And this guy was a tremendous prospect, one of the best in baseball, and they're hoping he can get back to that level.
It's really unreal how the injuries have trickled throughout the system for the Rangers. It's almost beyond comprehension. On the catching side, right, as they address the catcher position, how much does Yu Darvish's presence in the rotation affect who and how they go about filling that spot? Is there any accounting for Yu Darvish in that regard?
Yes, it's definitely a factor. I mean, Darvish is very particular about who he throws to, and, you know, a couple of years ago he struggled, didn't like throwing to A.J. Pierzynski, so that became a bit of an issue. He always liked Giovanni Soto. Mm-hmm. They traded Soto to the A's. He's a free agent. They might bring Soto back simply because he's so good working with Darvish.
If you had to wager, not that we do that, but if you wanted to wager on what John Daniels gets done at these meetings, what do you think he's able to accomplish?
Well, I think he'll try hard for starting pitching somehow, some way. But, you know, with John Lester still out there and Shields still out there and Scherzer still out there, the starting pitching market is moving very slow. And I think it's going to be one of those situations where the dominoes are going to have to start falling and start with John Lester. Once he makes his decision, which is supposed to happen early in the meetings, then, you know, you might see the starting pitching market speed up. You know, he needs to find a catcher, and I think he'll continue to talk about an outfielder.
Is there a catcher or two out there that we're thinking is really a kind of a front-line guy
front-line guy unless they can do something with San Diego. But, you know, they like Robinson Chirinos as a, you know, maybe 80 to 100 game catcher, and they'd just like somebody to go with them. You know, a left-handed bat would be great, but just somebody who can catch and throw, you know, handle the pitching staff. You know, if they'll have enough offense if everybody's healthy. They just need to, you know, have a second catcher who can, you know, defense, call games, that type of thing.
Okay, last thing for you, too. We didn't really talk about this earlier, but with the somewhat surprising departure of Ron Washington last year, now, you know, this year, first full year under kind of new managerial leadership, a comment or two about Jeff Banister.
Well, this guy has a real presence. That's what they really like about him. I mean, he really comes on strong, good players manager, they believe, has a great baseball background. He was a coach. He worked in the minor leagues. He was a coordinator. He played. You know, this guy was a cancer survivor. He survived a very serious, you know, neck injury when he was in college. I mean, really tough Texan type guy. I mean, the Rangers really feel like he'll be a great leader for this ball club.
Okay. Well, I know you got a lot of work to do in these coming days. See what Daniels and company can get done. T.R. Sullivan, appreciate the time.
My pleasure, guys.
All right. T.R. Sullivan, TexasRangers.com, and we appreciate you listening to MLB.com Extras, American League West.